The Israel Report with Rolene Marks for the latest information and the stories behind the news.
Rolene Marks, how are you?
Good afternoon, Howard and listeners. I hope you all had a great weekend. And yes, another week fraught with lots of news.
So I've been trying to follow the Saudi Arabian story, and it's getting more and more perplexing, more and more complicated. And now apparently the Saudis have said to Abbas that they need to that he needs to support Trump's peace plan or else. What is going on?
Well, basically, they told him accept Trump's peace plan or quit. So, you know, we discussed, you and I, last week, and I'm telling you, the people who make decisions in this world, mm-hmm. Howard, I think are influenced by our discussions.
Oh, there's
the
little doubt.
Because whenever we discuss something, we see evidence of it, you know, play out in mm-hmm. in the following days. But basically, what we do know is that Abbas met with the Saudi leadership about 6 days ago in Saudi. It was a very secretive meetings, and they said that he needs to stay away from any Iranian influence, and he needs to accept Trump's peace plan. And they said that they're very, very unhappy with media images of Hamas's deputy political leader Saleh al-Awuri visiting Tehran. And as we know, there is a reconciliation deal between Hamas and Fatah to form a unity government. And Awuri, who is Hamas's terror chief, he was the actual signatory on the reconciliatory deal with Fatah, which was signed just last month. And the Saudis also made it very, very clear that any of the Lebanese activists within Abbas's Fatah faction should not and cannot cooperate anymore with Hezbollah. Hezbollah and Hamas are both proxies of the Iranian regime. So we are definitely seeing the lines being drawn and the alliances being formed.
Well, to some extent, it's actually being simplified. We spoke last week and I said it's becoming more and more confusing, and I've been trying to understand it. But the reality is, if you just divide this into Saudi on the one side, Iran on the other, and everybody who supports them falling underneath it, it begins to make a little bit more sense, because then now you can see that there's tremendous pressure on Abbas, on the Palestinian Authority, to start moving towards the Saudi side rather than the Iran side. It seems to be that everybody's looking for support and for somebody to be aligned to them. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely. And we've got two major powers in the Middle East, the Saudis and the Iranians, each forming alliances. And, you know, the concern is, are they going to square up against each other in a major conflict? And they actually both represent two sides of the Sunni Shiite issues. Saudi Arabia is very much Sunni or Sunnah, and the Iranians are very much Shiite. And, you know, this is also a major lesson for many of the pundits, especially from the more liberal left, to say, well, if we sort out the Israel-Palestinian issue, then maybe we sort out the issues in the Middle East. But it is much, much, much more complicated than that. And we are really, you know, I think we're seeing that a kind of a deja vu, in where we can start using this terminology, axis of evil, again, because we see what happens when you support Iran and their proxies and their reach. So it looks like, on the one hand, you've got Iranian allies with its Houthi rebels in Yemen and Qatar, and elements like Hezbollah and Hamas who support them. And then you've got the other side of the coin. You've got Saudi Arabia. You've got Lebanon, a little bit of controversy last week, because there was an ishur or permission granted by Prime Minister Netanyahu to all the diplomats around the world, to all Israeli diplomats, saying that we need to be supporting the Saudis in their aims and in their strategies against Iran.
But although Israel is supportive of Saudi, and we know that Iran is a sworn enemy of Israel and has threatened for many, many years to destroy Israel. The reality is that Israel is almost inconsequential or just incidental, maybe, in this particular conflict. Yes, they're supporting Saudi, but so is America, and you know, so is Egypt, and so are other number of other countries. Israel isn't at all the focus here.
Israel isn't the focus, but we do have a dog in the race because we are very, very, very much against the Iranian nuclear program. And also, I mean, people say, "But you know, but the Europeans support the deal, and the nuclear program is to support energy." No, it's not. You know, when we hear the horrendous Holocaust denial and threats of destruction against the Jewish state and the parading of ballistic missiles through the streets of Iran, we take these threats very, very seriously, and we'll do everything in our power not only just to defend our territory, but to ensure that this deal does not go through. And complicating issues is Lebanon. We've got the Iranians and elements who support the Iranians, including Hamas, saying that the Saudis put pressure on the former President Hariri, Hariri, who resigned just last Saturday, saying that if anything should happen to him, you can blame Iran and you can blame Hezbollah. And no sooner had this happened when Houthi rebels in Yemen fired a Borkan 2, or what it's known in English as a Volcano 2 long-range ballistic missile, at the international airport in Riyadh. And the Saudis quite rightly saw this as an act of war.
Very frightening indeed. Terrible incident last night, 135 killed at on the Iran-Iraq border in an earthquake. I believe this was felt all the way through to Tel Aviv.
Yes, well, we did feel the aftershocks of this earthquake, and as of about an hour ago, the death toll has risen to over 300, and it's absolutely horrendous. And I know many of you are out there wondering whether or not Israel will be sending aid to this region, because Israel is very, very well known for its humanitarian diplomacy. Anytime that we do have issues around the world, be it natural disasters like an earthquake or a major terror attack or any other kind of issue, Israel is the first to send aid. But in this case, and having been turned down with aid before from these areas, you know, sometimes you have to suspend hostilities and conflict to focus on helping civilians. But I think the situation is such that even though Israel has extended our condolences to the people of both Iran and Iraq who are affected by this, we cannot send at this moment the normal humanitarian aid that we would send.
And what a pity that is. Amnesty International saying the Syrian regime is guilty of crimes against humanity.
Well, Boker Tov, Amnesty International. Hallelujah. Amnesty International, who is a human rights non-governmental organization or NGO, have found Syria's regime responsible for seizures, unlawful killings, and forced displacements. And they say that they have filed a report called We Leave or We Die, and they've had a look at four kind of local accords or issues which they say were preceded by unlawful sieges, bombardment aimed at forcing civilians to leave their homes. And we know very well the refugee crisis that has been created as a result of the Syrian civil war. And they say that this is because of government forces under the Assad regime, as well as the kind of attacks taking place against the civilian population, like chemical attacks, and these are crimes against humanity. So, good morning, Boker Tov. Thanks for joining the rest of us who are very, very, very concerned with what is happening in Syria.
And maybe somebody could write to former U.S. President Barack Obama and just mention that maybe that red line has been crossed even by, according to Amnesty International.
Yeah, I think that red line has tripped him up. And I think it's a shunder on the international community, who really have not done enough to send in humanitarian aid. We saw last week the issue with Priti Patel, where it got petty, where she actually appealed to Israeli officials, how can Britain increase its humanitarian aid to Syria? And the issue became such that we saw her fired for doing this without clearing it past the government. And, you know, it's these kind of issues that are very, very frustrating. And unfortunately, like a broadcaster, quite fabulous broadcaster, said in London, you know, it's like watching The Wizard of Oz. All roads lead back to Israel. Mm-hmm. And when you discover that the wizard, in fact, is just a human being, it really is. We live in an Orwellian universe.
We do indeed. Finally, US has warned of 9 proposed UN anti-Israel resolutions. Please tell me this ain't so.
This is, I mean, no sooner have we just spoken about the atrocities and the crimes against humanity in Syria, than the United Nations, or as AFOS, think they're becoming useless nations, have now voted or tabled in their meeting on Friday, which was a meeting of the Fourth Committee. It's called the Fourth Committee, which is also known as the Special Political and Decolonization Committee, and that is made up of 193 UN member states. I mean, I really don't think there's anything else on the agenda. I mean, how would I be surprised if they even break for coffee? I think their absolute focus is Israel.
But incredible to know that hundreds, nearly more than 500,000 people have died in Syria, but now there are 9 proposed anti-Israel resolutions. What are they? What do they include?
Well, first of all, I think just off the top of our heads, we can rattle off so many gross human rights violations. Syria, we've got Rohingya, we've got even the situation with farm murders in South Africa, and the situation in South Africa with regards to crime. And to me, that is a crime against humanity.
Absolutely.
But we have 9 drafts of text, which will likely be about 20 anti-Israel and pro-Palestinian resolutions, and these were voted in apparently quite overwhelmingly, and the United States has taken a stand against it, saying the U.S. continues to oppose the annual submission of a disproportionate number of unfair UNGA resolutions biased against Israel. So while that word disproportionate is flung at us, we can fling it right back. And they said they are extremely disappointed that despite support for reform, member states continue to single out Israel with these resolutions. And, you know, speaking, I was at the Witsa Aviv seminar last week, and I was speaking to the European representatives there from Germany, from other countries, and they say, you know, in their countries, in European countries, the decisions, the opinions of the United Nations holds tremendous cachet. You know, if the United Nations votes in these resolutions and UNESCO votes in these resolutions, these are seen as holding serious water in these countries. You know, it might not be for us. I mean, we can say shmum and useless nations, but for other countries and for
absolutely.
Jewish communities,
there's little doubt. You know, when if you follow South African media, it's not unreasonable for somebody who isn't intimately involved or knowledgeable about the situation to look up and say, hold on a minute, there's just been 9 UN anti-Israel resolutions passed. There must be something really bad going on here. I don't think you can blame people for that.
No, absolutely. I mean, if I didn't know better, I'd think, wow, you know, really, you know, there's something to be said here. And it's very, very dangerous because these resolutions eventually enter the history books. One of the resolutions we know that they have tabled is, of course, blaming Israel for the situation in Gaza. They praise Hamas and Fatah's unity agreement. They will be voting to say that Jerusalem apparently is occupied. They will say East Jerusalem status is occupied territory, and they will also call for international companies to boycott Israel, and they will condemn Israel's presence on the Golan Heights. I mean, I don't know about you, but I am seeing institutionalized anti-Semitism. It's barely a couple of days after we mark Kristallnacht, nearly 80 years since these measures against the Jewish community. And for me, it's history repeating itself just in a different outfit.
What is your view, or what has been the reaction today in Israel about the 1986, I think it was, letter that Prince Charles penned with regard to Israel and saying that Jews, the immigration of European Jews to Israel is very much a cause of the problem?
Well, as you can imagine, it made the headlines in every major newspaper, both Hebrew and English. I'm not sure. I didn't look at the French press over here. And by French press, I mean the actual media, not the coffee pot. Shows you I'm relishing for a coffee right now, Howard. But this was very, very serious. You know, we're very skeptical about the British royal family here in Israel, you know, even though some of us absolutely chalish over the wardrobes and the pomp and the circumstance.
You just like the shoes, right?
We are very definitely the shoes.
Right. Oh.
You know, the Israelis typically don't take their tea like the English, so, you know, that's of little relevance. But we do take note very, very carefully that royalty in the region, that major leaders, you know, are feted by the royal family. The royal family has visited virtually every country in the world, but they haven't visited us. And while Prime Minister Netanyahu has met with Her Majesty the Queen and former President, may he rest in peace, Shimon Peres, was lauded by the Queen, we haven't seen the royal family pay us a significant visit. The last we saw was Prince Charles here for Shimon Peres' funeral towards this time last year. Mm. But we are extremely, extremely disappointed, you know, especially several days after we have celebrated the Balfour Declaration. And it shows us very, very, very little understanding of the situation faced by Israel. It shows very little understanding or acknowledgement of Jewish suffering, of Jewish history. We're disappointed at Prince Charles because he has always seemed like somebody who's concerned about heritage and history and why the singling out of the Jewish people. And of course, there's the more cynical amongst us who are saying, you know, the upper echelons of British society, you know, haven't been the greatest lover of the Jews. So a lot of disappointment and a lot of cynicism here about that letter.
Indeed, and many of our listeners, when we spoke about it earlier, echoing your thoughts. Time is 5:55. That's Rolene Marks with the Israel Report, joining us every day, Monday to Thursday.